Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Well, because it's Tuesday, it's time for us to ask the doctors. Give us a call with your coronavirus questions. Are you wondering if it's safe to see family and friends post-Omicron? Should you still be wearing a mask, even if your community doesn't require it anymore? Will you need another booster soon? All of these questions, or some of your own, call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also tweet us at Radio Boston. Joining us this week to help answer your questions, Dr. Helen Boucher, infectious disease physician at Tufts Medical Center and interim dean of Tufts University School of Medicine. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Also with us, Dr. Cassandra Pierre, who's acting hospital epidemiologist and an infectious diseases physician at Boston Medical Center. Hello there, Dr. Pierre.
Hi, great to be here.
So let's start with the state of hospitals, since you both know a little bit about that. Healthcare officials in the state are ringing alarm bells still about some of the stresses. But we know that the COVID numbers are dropping and dropping dramatically. So let's check in a little bit and tell us how things are right now at your hospitals. Dr. Boucher?
Sure. So, we have sort of good news and bad news, I would say. The good news is that the COVID numbers are much better. We've seen significant decreases in the number of patients admitted both with and for COVID, according to the new DPH criteria over the last several weeks. So that's good news. Less good is that we continue to see a very large number of acutely ill patients who appear to have consequences of delaying care. And this is going to be a problem that we have to contend with for some time. We still are dealing with staffing issues. The good news is we have fewer staff out sick with COVID, but we still have fewer staff overall because of people leaving healthcare. Yeah. So still challenging days at the hospital.
So when you say, let's just briefly, Dr. Boucher, so at Tufts, you're seeing that folks who had to delay care because of the hospital situation and the pandemic, that has created bigger problems down the road because of that delay in care. Where are you seeing it, most prevalent? What types of care has been delayed that is really creating problems for the hospital, would you say?
Well, we're seeing it, I would say, across the board. We're seeing complications of cardiovascular disease, cancer, delayed diagnosis of cancer, diabetes, across the gamut, surgeries that had to be postponed, people who can barely walk because of their bone issues, their orthopedic surgeries had to be delayed. So lots of consequences here. And, bad outcomes, it's being reported all across the country that people are seeing bad outcomes of things that could have been preventable had we not been in a pandemic and been able to care for the patients who needed us for their non-COVID diseases.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Pierre at Boston Medical Center, what's the situation like there?
It's very similar. We have also seen a decline in the number of patients in our hospitals, a bit in our ICUs, and in our emergency departments who are coming in for COVID or have COVID. We also are getting back to our normal staffing numbers, but we continue to have a number of, in addition to people who have complications of COVID, even including our healthcare workers, we still have this sense of exhaustion. And the sense that we are continuing to live through the same nightmare multiple times. And so that's just kind of left a lot of our workforce demoralized. And after each successive wave, it's just harder to pick ourselves back up. I would also say, similar to what Dr. Boucher has noted, we see a large percentage of our population coming in with delayed healthcare issues that have worsened in the interval in which they were not seen. And although we are slowly getting back to our pre-Omicron levels of surgeries, which is something that we very much welcomed, we were also seeing the outcomes of having delayed those surgeries for malignancies, for heart disease, for other kinds of surgical concerns. And so, the concern is that each successive wave leaves us a little sicker, leaves us a little bit more vulnerable.
I want to ask a question now that I'm sure a lot of people are wondering about, because some communities are releasing mask mandates. There's talk in Boston about the city's vaccine mandate, possibly some accommodations being made there based on what the data might say. Let's talk about, is it time to relax these mask mandates? And then is it also time to start thinking about vaccine mandates? Dr. Boucher, what would you say?
Well, you know, I think it's certainly time to start talking about how we come out of this. And, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about our school children and, you know, making decisions, especially in universities where we have sort of everybody together who's fully vaccinated and starting to think about what kind of criteria we might use to peel back some of these mitigation measures like masks. And I think that's appropriate. I think that it is very important to emphasize that the best tool we have today is still vaccination. Hmm. We know that vaccination and boosters work to prevent serious illness and death from COVID. So I do not feel we should be doing anything besides our best to provide information and answer questions to help people who haven't yet been vaccinated decide to get vaccinated.
Dr. Pierre, do you think some folks should still be wearing masks even if it's not mandated in the community they're in?
I certainly think that we continue to experience a substantial level of transmission of COVID in our communities, even though it is coming down. It's also important to note that although a lot of people are thinking towards this end stage, we are not in the endemic stage of COVID yet. We'll know that we are when we're not experiencing overwhelmed hospitals, huge swaths of our frontline workers being out sick every time we have a wave of infection. And so when we think about relaxing those mandates, I think it's important to know that even though we all feel like we need a break, and even though, yes, we want to plan for what our futures will be based on what the science tells us, that this is not, in the current format, foregoing a mask is not a durable solution because we have not yet entered the endemic phase. And for those who might be wondering, I would say that those who are under vaccinated, have not been boosted, and live with vulnerable individuals in their households are certainly at high risk for foregoing that mask.
Okay, I want to remind listeners, if you have a question for our doctors, call us with your coronavirus questions about masking or vaccinations or other questions that you have on your mind. Here's the number to call. It's 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also tweet us at Radio Boston. I would like to go to Megan, who is calling from Quincy, and she has a question about what to do being fully vaxxed and how to deal with coronavirus variants. Megan, are you on the air?
Yes, thank you. I was just curious. I feel, you know, with the ongoing debate and sort of conflicted about boosters, if they're, I am vaccinated, and everyone I know pretty much is, and just wondering, do the boosters deal with the new variants, or they just help, I guess, the original?
So you're trying to figure out
how that works.
Yeah. So Megan, you're trying to figure out if it's worth it to even get a booster.
Just how to continue getting them. Like, mm-hmm. I've heard a certain number, and then it's less effective. So is it, like, currently?
Okay.
Like, how many we'll get to through the future, I guess.
Okay, good question. Dr. Pierre, what do you say? What about boosters?
Hey, Megan, that's a great question. So we have really strong data at this point to show that our boosters reduce our risk of getting significant illness, going to the hospital and dying from COVID-19. They also reduce the risk of infection, including from the Omicron variant. So we were, after our primary series, after a period of 5 to 6 months, seeing that immunity against infection wane, and the boosters help to restore that even against Omicron. So clearly people are still having breakthrough infections, but with our boosters, we have less and we also have more mild disease. The other important thing that we're seeing is that there's some evidence that we have decreased transmission from individuals who have their boosters as well. So both are really important things in terms of protecting ourselves and protecting each other. Now, to your point about, you know, how long do we need to keep doing this? That's a great question. We don't have an answer for that yet. There is evidence from Israel that a fourth dose does increase antibody levels compared to having a third dose. But we really don't know whether that actually does anything in terms of further reducing our risk of infection. In fact, there's not a lot of compelling evidence that it does. And so I think we need a little bit more time to figure out whether this is something that we do every year, every 2 years. We don't have that information now. And also to the point about variants, the booster currently does protect against variant, and we know that the pharmaceutical companies are making variant-specific boosters. And I don't know if this is in Megan's mind, but ultimately the thing that we really need to do is ensure that we have good levels of primary vaccination around the world to eliminate or reduce the number of variants that we're seeing that we have to constantly be concerned about. But at this point, the booster is a good move to make.
We have a question coming in about that right now from Antonia, who is calling from Cambridge. Antonia, what's your question?
Hi. So my question really is about the utility of the booster in individuals who had the double vaccination in the spring and then had the full illness recently. Does that make sense? So I get that they're telling us we should get it. So I have two 14-year-olds. Both of whom were vaccinated with Pfizer in May, and then they got COVID in January. And now the question mark is, I don't want them to feel ill for another day or two from the booster. I'd prefer to avoid that, given that they just spent 10 days at home. What is the utility of the booster in a recently infected person?
Okay. Dr. Pierre, would you like to take that up again, or Dr. Boucher?
Sure, I'm happy to give it a stab. So this is a really, really important question, right? So in infection after vaccination, the question is, does the booster provide benefit and is it recommended? First, it is recommended, and there is emerging data, actually, that it's increasingly being observed that people are getting reinfected. So that even though you've had natural infection and there's some natural immunity provided, it doesn't last that long. And that getting that booster is likely to have protection that lasts longer. So for your girls, I think as we're still in this, you know, I think it's worth getting them boosted and really considering it. I had both of my girls boosted just for this reason, just to know that they'll have longer protection as we get through this epidemic. I'm very interested in what Dr. Pierre thinks about this as well.
I completely agree. I know we have evidence, you know, not necessarily from this phase, but prior variants, where we see that individuals who have, you know, had infection-related immunity, got vaccinated, reduce their risk of reinfection compared to those with infection who did not get vaccinated. The thought, even for fully vaccinated individuals who get infected behind getting boosted, is that, as Dr. Boucher mentions, it may give us longer lasting and broader protection. So longer in terms of being able to more credibly reduce our risk of infection and more severe disease, but also potentially the ability to have protection against other kinds of variants. So I think that this is kind of a situation where there are a lot of wins. And yes, there may be a day or two of side effects that hopefully should be mild, but the overall benefit is likely to be much greater of just going ahead and getting that booster.
Okay. I'd like to remind listeners, if you have a question for our doctors today, you can call us at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also tweet us at Radio Boston. I have a question. As communities, we know many of them are releasing their mask mandates, their vaccine mandates. Folks are starting to say, okay, let's relax things a little bit here. But what should really be the criteria for doing that? I mean, what's your recommendation? What do we look at to say, yes, today's the day we can no longer require masks? Dr. Boucher, what would you say?
Well, you know, I think that it's a constellation of factors, including, you know, what's happening in terms of the number of cases. Hospitalization, as Dr. Pierre pointed out, is one of the most important, right? Because one of the the key priorities is that our healthcare system can take care of everybody. And so really, it's not advisable to think about backing down until we're in a position where we know that we have capacity in all our hospitals. And then, you know, the ability to protect the vulnerable. And I think this gets at something that was mentioned earlier. Just because mandates are relaxed doesn't mean we shouldn't wear masks in certain situations and shouldn't think about other mitigation measures. And I think one of the themes that's emerging as we start to come out of this is sort of everyone's individual risk tolerance. People are going to have to decide. And many people may still want to wear a mask, and that's great. You know, we know that they work, and we have other mitigations that work. So I think it will be a constellation of factors that will lead the public health authorities to dial back some of these recommendations.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Pierre, anything to add there?
I would agree. You know, I would say that, for example, in Boston, the Boston Public Health Commission has designated the number or the percentage of ICU beds that are occupied as a whole and the number of hospitalizations per day to get at that issue of capacity. And then also looking at the community COVID positivity rate, looking at a certain level below which, for example, you know, you might not need to show your, you know, proof of vaccination to get into indoor spaces. I would say that in addition to that, you know, even though this is looking at science, looking at, you know, what are the benchmarks that we return to relax our mandates, the concern I have is about durability as well, because we know that in certain communities, our vaccination rate continues to be less than what we would hope it would be to withstand all the impacts, the hospitalization, the illnesses, and the deaths of recurrent waves of infection. So we need to be sure that what we have in terms of our community vaccination will allow us to have durable approaches to mask and vaccine relaxation, because people are really, really tired. And I think it might be difficult to get trust back after we've relaxed in one direction.
Mm-hmm. And what about folks who might be thinking about how risky it is to go maskless? You know, what do you say, you know, the grocery store versus a concert versus a restaurant? When would you say, you know, keep the mask on for a little while longer? Or in this instance, it might be okay for you to take it off?
I think there's as Dr. Boucher just said, there's a constellation of factors. There's a couple of things that we think about. Obviously, indoor versus outdoor is a really important first step. We know there's a lot more infection and transmissions that occur in indoor spaces, especially those that are highly crowded. So for those individuals who are going in to a concert, that is a situation where you're going to be potentially closely packed with others. Respiratory droplets will be flying as people cheer. So that is not the situation to forego wearing a mask. The other things to think about is, you know, again, how crowded, how densely packed it is. What's the community COVID positivity? And what are your own underlying risk factors that put you at higher risk for COVID, severe COVID disease? What are the risk factors of the people you live with in your household? Mm. And what is your vaccination status? So all kinds of things to think about.
Okay, I want to try to get in one more question before we go here. Maureen is calling from Cambridge. Maureen, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
My question is, my booster was 6 months ago. So what do I do now? Do I get another booster?
Good question. So
I'm 75 years old, so I'm in a category of a little more careful.
Well, what should she do? Okay, she's had her booster. It's been 6 months. Is it waning now? What should she do? Dr. Boucher?
Yeah, so Maureen, this is a really good question. And, you know, the recommendation today is that you don't need another booster. But as you mentioned, because you're a little at higher risk because of your age, I would recommend that you're a little bit more careful so that you might consider wearing a mask even after mandates are dropped, especially in close, poorly ventilated indoor settings, for example. That data that Dr. Pierre mentioned earlier from Israel may be showing a hint that a fourth booster is helpful in older individuals. So we'll be anxious to see more of that data to see if the recommendations might change. And so I would say stay tuned, but nothing to do right now except be careful as you are.
All right. Dr. Helen Boucher, infectious disease physician at Tufts Medical Center and interim dean of Tufts University School of Medicine, and Dr. Cassandra Pierre, acting hospital epidemiologist and infectious disease physician at Boston Medical Center. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Deborah.